Chapter 9. Styles and Allison spend 20 minutes getting in a spirited discussion at their hotel room of the best way to gain entrance to the wedding. Allison is invited, of course, and she plans on going through the front door whether Drake likes it or not. Styles talks some about the security measures he's seen and makes sure to make one or two errors. After some discussion, they agree the easiest thing to do would be to smuggle Styles in the trunk of their car. This is a plan that Styles would never agree to in real life, but the incident with him and the trunk of Peter Hale's car was never made public, so Drake has no way of knowing that. They've already talked about their real plan for entering, but there are still a few things he hasn't decided on. Primarily, he isn't sure whether or not they'll be able to get into the house proper without attracting attention. He's sure that the back will be locked up. He's still mulling that over when there's a knock on the hotel room door. Puzzled, he walks over and looks through the peephole. Wednesday's younger sister is standing there, looking nervous. Styles considers not opening the door because he has no idea what she'll say, and he doesn't know what Drake will do if he hears about it. But she knocks again, so he pulls it open. Izzy looks up at him and says, straight-faced, "Would you like to buy some Girl Scout cookies?" "Wow, you guys go door-to-door everywhere," Styles says, laughing. No thanks. I'm not from around these parts." "Okay, bye," Izzy says, and turns and walks away. Styles follows her, letting the hotel door close behind him. She walks to the stairwell and goes through the door, then seems to relax once the door is shut behind her. "Izzy, what are you doing here?" Styles asks. "Did Martin Drake kill my parents?" she asks. Styles sighs. "Probably yes," he says. "I'm still working on proving it, but I'm pretty sure he was directly responsible, even though he's not the one who actually pulled the metaphorical trigger." "Then I want to help you," Izzy says. Styles is about to tell her that Wednesday will gut him if he gets her younger siblings involved, but then realizes that Izzy could provide some much-needed help. Due to her age, nobody will be suspicious of her. She can unlock the back door for them, and she can get a weapon to Wednesday, too. "Okay, but we can't talk about it here." "I know," Izzy says. "He put bugs in our house, too. Months ago. He told Grandma that if she tried to do anything, he'd know, and she'd come after the little ones." Her face screws up in an effort not to cry. "I wanted to fight anyway, but Grandma told me that there was nothing we could do." "Well, Lucy called me here to fix this problem she's having," Styles says. "So, come with me and I'll explain everything, okay?" Izzy nods. "Okay." It takes about half an hour to get Izzy up to date, although Styles skims over some of the particulars. Izzy is more than willing to help get them into Drake Manor and help her sister, and they nail out all their plans around Ray's kitchen table while they eat pizza. "You said he has bugs in your house, right?" Styles asks, and Izzy nods. "So, theoretically, that conversation he had with your grandmother the other day got recorded." He stands up. "Okay, we need to get that recording. If we're lucky, it's a local receiver that he only changes out periodically. He's a busy man, after all. Let's go find it." It's looking like it's going to be another sleepless night at Ray Parr's den. Styles is racking his brain. He's gone over every piece of evidence what feels like 100 times. He's startled out of his daze when his phone rings, playing Hawaii 5-0. He picks it up and says, "Yo, Dad, what's up?" "Well, I stumbled on something interesting," Tom says. "You know that body that was found in the woods? The one that the Arnell couple went to investigate before they were killed?" "Yeah," Styles says, not feeling very hopeful. "I had requested the case file, like you asked. Sent it over, like you asked. Didn't think much more about it," Tom says. "But then, this afternoon, a detective from Jacksonville called me. He wanted to know why I had requested it. So I told him the truth, that a couple had been killed nearby. It was unsolved, but I was grasping at any straw I could find." "Okay," Styles says. "He actually got kind of excited," Tom says. "Turns out that he never believed that the guy who was convicted," there's a moment of shuffling papers, "Trevor Hughes, was actually guilty." Styles frowns and sits up. "But he was convicted on solid evidence, he says. Yep, Tom says. That's what the detective said. Said that after the DNA evidence came in, he had no choice but to arrest him and watch him get charged. But he still believed Hughes was innocent. He thought the DNA was planted. Nobody could figure out why Hughes would have driven all the way up to Kentucky to dump the body. He had an alibi, too. Yeah, I saw that in the file. But out drinking with friends is a pretty soft alibi when confronted with, you know, DNA. Stiles says. He had wondered about the location of the body himself, but hadn't thought much about it after seeing the conviction. It was blood, right? And I assume that Hughes would have said something if someone had stolen his blood. True, Tom says, but he donated blood once every few months. Huh. Hang on. Stiles gets on his laptop and employs several minutes of Google. I don't know if it would matter. Donor DNA doesn't really last very long once it's transfused. I assume someone checked to make sure that nobody had broken into a blood bank and stolen blood? He asks, and Tom confirms. I don't know, Dad. If his blood had showed up at a random crime scene, that would be one thing. But this was a guy he knew. What are the odds that he would have been killed by some random guy who just happened to have Hugh's blood? Tom sighs. I have to admit it's unlikely, but you were the one who kept saying that you felt like he had to have lured the Arnells out somehow. This is the most likely point of control. This is how to get them to a certain place at a certain time. It's gotta be your connection. And the detective really wanted to find a way to prove his innocence, even now that he's dead. I did a little research on this guy, and I'd be the last person to say that a good man can't be driven to murder, but he really didn't seem like the type to kill his business partner over an argument about money. This was a guy who volunteered at homeless shelters, founded a non-profit, donated bone marrow, ran for city council on a platform of... Wait, what? Stiles feels a sudden jolt of energy. He donated bone marrow? Are you sure? Yeah, there was an article about it. He was an athlete and had to give up some competition he had been training for in order to do it. Why?
Because Martin Drake had fucking leukemia.
Stiles is scrambling for a pen and paper, and he doesn't know what he's going to write down.
He had fucking leukemia, and he went into remission after a bone marrow transplant.
Stiles, I'm not sure.
Bone marrow recipients are chimeras,
Stiles says, so excited now that every wolf in the house is gathering to see what he's shouting about.
Their blood has different DNA. It has the DNA of their donor. Oh my God, Martin Drake killed Hugh's partner and deliberately planted his own blood there in order to frame Hughes.
Jesus Christ, Tom says. That's, I hate to use the word diabolical, but if the shoe fits.
I have to go, Stiles says frantically. I have to hack into, I don't know, wherever they keep bone marrow donor information. I have to prove that Drake knew who his donor was. I have to go. I'll talk to you later. I love you, bye.
He says, and frantically drops the phone. Mac is already typing. There are four major bone marrow banks in the United States, she says. But... Her typing speeds up. Slows down. Speeds up again. She scans the screen for information.
But only one of those existed at the time that Drake had leukemia. So it's got to be that one. Give me a few hours and I can... How about some coffee?
On it, Erica says. I'll make a Starbucks run. I'll go with you, Scott says. Jesus, if we can prove this, Derek says softly. He framed the man who saved his life. Even the worst hunter will side with us after that.
Oh, we are going to prove it, Stiles says, and then they'll believe us about everything.
Dawn is approaching, and Stiles is elbow deep in the murder case file when his phone rings. He glances down and sees that it's Chris. He picks up and says, Stilinski Burlesque, you got the dough, we got the show. What I have is a problem, Chris says.
Oh, geez, Stiles says. What happened?
There's a marked pause, and then Chris says, carefully, I might have gone overboard. Stiles grins despite himself.
Yeah?
There are kids, Stiles. Chris says, anger seeping into his tone. Children. You didn't tell me there were children here.
Did I not think to mention that?
Stiles says innocently, and Chris makes a disgruntled noise.
Okay, how bad is it?
Well, it's not too bad. I have all of Drake's men in custody. I've brought the children together and organized sort of a playpen for them. The adults are still where they started, although I've assured them that I'm going to personally investigate what happened and why they were captured, so they settle down a bit.
That sounds more like the opposite of a problem, Stiles says.
Unless Drake finds out.
Don't worry about that, Stiles says. I made sure he couldn't receive any incoming calls overnight. And now you've got all his men taken care of. Can you make it back here in time for the wedding?
There's a pause and some muffled conversation in the background. Yeah, Sam says he'll stay here with the kids. Make sure none of Drake's men cause any trouble.
Stiles takes a moment to mentally savor the image of Beefcake McAbcrunch getting overrun with werewolf toddlers. It's adorable. He hopes that the prison has cameras.
Okay, I'll see you in a few hours then. Stiles, Chris says, I'm not happy about this.
Why?
Stiles asks, blank. Chris has done a good thing. Rescued kids, put away bad guys. It was the kind of stuff that Chris does. He's still sitting there, confused, while Chris says nothing. When Derek lets out a sigh, he walks over and takes the phone out of Stiles' hand.
Chris, it's Derek, he says, and there's a pause. Yeah, I'll talk to him, okay?
Another pause, and Stiles hates that he can't hear the other end of the conversation the way Derek can.
Okay, see you soon.
Derek hangs up and hands the phone back.
What?
Stiles says, disgruntled.
You manipulated him, Stiles,
Derek says patiently. Several other pack members look up, and then hastily away. Allison's jaw trembles, and Scott reaches out to squeeze her forearm.
I know you didn't mean to. I know that you thought he would understand what you wanted him to do, but you withheld information from him to provoke a specific reaction. 6 months ago, Chris would have brushed that off as you being you, but after what Sally did to him?
Oh, Jesus, Stiles says. I didn't mean it like that.
I know that. So does he.
Derek shakes his head a little.
You wanted the facility secure because that's what was safest for everyone. You wanted the kids to be rescued. But why didn't you just tell him that?
Because I thought...
Stiles sighs.
I thought if I told him right away, he might go confront Drake and spoil the plan. Because I knew he was, you know, sensitive about that kind of thing. And after what happened last autumn, I can't always gauge how he'll react to things anymore. He's getting, you know, aggressive at weird times.
So instead of trusting him to work with you and make a rational decision together, you manipulated him into doing what you wanted.
Derek's quiet for a minute.
I'm not saying this to hurt you. It's a part of who you are. You read people and you know how to get the reactions you want out of them. You've been doing it with Drake all week, and with Wednesday too, to a lesser extent. And you've done it with Chris in the past. Just put him in situations where you know what he'll do, because you rely on Chris to be a certain way. And I think that used to be okay because Chris knows you, because Chris trusts you. But you can't do that to him anymore, Stiles.
Okay, Stiles nods. I didn't think of it that way, but that's not an excuse. I'll apologize when I see him.
Derek squeezes his shoulder.
Come on, we still have a lot of work to do.
Everything goes basically according to plan for once. Drake has two guys checking people over as they enter, and Chris and Allison's car gets stopped. Drake himself is there to supervise, as his guys pat Chris down, and Chris rolls his eyes and makes annoyed comments. Allison gets a pat down too, but they're nervous about groping an attractive 21-year-old under her father's watchful glower, so they miss the knife she's tucked into her cleavage and the one strapped to her inner thigh. Their metal detectors don't catch it either, because it's ceramic. Stiles has been using ceramic knives for cooking lately and loves them. Allison has been practicing with it and complaining about the balance all night. Once that's over with,
Drake makes a few comments about what else might be in their car. Allison pretends to be nervous. Chris starts to get pissed off. Drake dramatically opens the trunk, only to reveal empty space. He looks around for the first time, appears somewhat off balance. Chris says, "Are you finished?" And Drake grudgingly allows them through. The best part of all this drama is that it's easy for Izzy to slip in while it's happening. She just walks past the two guards who are busy with Chris and Allison and heads up to the house. The man at the front entrance of the house asks her for her invitation, and she gives him the one that Styles received since he won't be needing it. Once she texts Styles to let him know that she's made it inside, they put Phase 2 into operation. The rest of the pack, along with Ray Parr, has been waiting out back, behind the enormous hedges that shield the backyard from any neighbors. There isn't a lot of cover, but superior werewolf hearing makes it easy enough to avoid the guys that Drake has patrolling. Squirming through the hedges is going to take effort, and the backyard is crawling with Drake's men, who are all there to discourage that exact event. But Styles isn't worried. Styles has a plan. His plan is Erica. She wiggles through the hedge, waits until there are no guards nearby, then goes the rest of the way through. She's wearing a blue sequin dress that barely covers the essentials, and one of the straps is artlessly falling down. She's also holding an empty champagne glass and lets out a trill giggle as she stumbles to the ground. It's an interesting fact, Styles has found, that when you want to avoid attention, one of the best things to do is draw attention. No one trying to sneak in would do it in heels and a sequin dress. They wouldn't be giggling and stumbling, so it never occurs to the guards for an instant that Erica is anything but an already inebriated wedding guest who somehow got past them and started wandering the backyard. "Miss, you can't be out here," one of the men says in a firm tone.
"Oh, Lord, I think I'm already drunk,"
Erica giggles, leaning on him.
"Help me with the...
She gestures vaguely at where the buckle on one of her shoes has come undone. The man says.
"Just hang on to me for a minute,"
Erica says, letting her weight fall against him, incidentally digging her hip into his groin. He flushes and looks away.
"There, I got it,"
she says, straightening back up and nearly falling back the other way.
"Whoops,"
she declares, as one of the other men catches her and the strap of her dress falls even further down. She's one more stumble away from flashing everyone, and suddenly every guard in the entire yard is coming over to see whether or not that's going to happen. Given that, it's beyond easy for the rest of the pack to slip through the hedge and duck through the yard and through the back door that Izzy has unlocked for them. There are plenty of people milling around by a table full of champagne glasses and hors d'oeuvres, but they see their formal clothing and assume they're wedding guests. Derek picks a twig out of Styles' hair as one of the guards escorts Erica back into the house. "Oh, there you are," Derek says, accepting her arm. She giggles and pats his chest flirtatiously. "Sorry," he says to the guard. "She's such a lightweight." "No problem at all," the guard says, coming close to a leer. "Okay, we are good to go," Styles says after he walks away. "You guys take your positions. I have to go have a quick chat with the priest." The priest is easy to find, in the little dressing room next to the glassed-in porch, and he's very amenable to letting Styles say something before he starts talking. Or at least, Styles brought enough $100 bills to make him amenable. He'll be quick, he promises. He just wants to make a quick announcement. The priest clearly thinks he's about to start selling Amway products, but doesn't care enough to argue with him. Styles slips into the closet when someone comes to let the priest know that it's time to go. Then he waits. He can't come out until the last second. He hears the murmurs of noise die down, and the familiar chorus of "Here comes the bride," which he's very sure must annoy Wednesday. It's not her type of song. The music stops and Styles steps out. Steps up behind the priest, then steps in front of them. "Ladies and gentlemen," he says, with a broad smile, "we are gathered here today for the trial of Martin Drake for the murders of Betty and Curtis Arnell."